Welcome to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly. This podcast is presented in the context of our Sunday morning service. We hope you enjoy this presentation.
Chapter 11, or if you have a smartphone, you can turn to there on your phone. If you also want to take out your notes from your bulletin, our sermon notes, and for those in our life groups that meet throughout the week, it has our homework in there. For those of you who are here for the first time, we want to say we're so glad that you're here. And maybe for some of you, it's been a long time since you've been in church. And maybe the reason is, it's kind of like what you saw in the video. That lady was angry at God because she felt that God gave her something and then he took it away. And I know many people have felt that way sometimes where, you know, life goes along and then all of a sudden it seems like God yanks the carpet out from underneath them. And maybe for some of you, you know, you're kind of even surprised you're in church today because of something that God had done and you haven't been in church in a long time and you don't know why you're here. Well, I'm going to tell you why you're here, because God brought you here, because today that's what we're going to be talking about. Why does God seemingly do bad things to people? Why does he allow that to happen? And so this morning, we are wrapping up a series that we have called The Five Catalysts. A catalyst in your notes this morning is a person or event that quickly causes change or action. And in this series, we've been looking at five things that God uses to quickly cause us to change in our faith, to cause us to grow in our faith. And those things that we've been looking at the past few weeks, first of all, we have practical teaching. Teaching that we receive in a Sunday morning, in a class, maybe through watching someone on TV like Joyce Meyer or doing a Beth Moore Bible study. But practical teaching that we receive can change our life. We've talked about private disciplines. When we spend personal time in prayer and reading the Word, fasting, giving, memorizing Scripture, it's those secret practices that demonstrate devotion to God. That's a second way that our faith grows. The third way is personal ministry. It's when we do what God nudges us to do. We maybe go on a missions trip. We make a phone call to somebody that God is prompting us to call. There's someone that we're standing next to in the store or having a conversation with a neighbor, and God nudges us to talk to them about something or to share our testimony, to share our faith, to share the gospel. Maybe he says, I want you to volunteer and get involved in this ministry at church, work with kids, work on the worship team, the greeters, food pantry, whatever it might be. But God wants us to do something, and when we obey and do it, we see our faith grow. The fourth thing is providential relationships. And that is when God brings people into our lives. It might be individuals, it might be couples, it might be even groups of people, and they intersect our paths and they help us to grow. This morning, we're going to look at the fifth and final catalyst that God uses to bring about an explosion in our faith. And it's something that we call pivotal circumstances. Pivotal circumstances. And in your notes, it says pivotal circumstances is interpreting life's events, both the good and the bad, as an opportunity to strengthen one's faith and draw attention to God. Whenever a Christian talks about, you know, what developed their faith as a follower of Jesus Christ, what brought about significant growth, what was a milestone in my walk with God, many times something you hear is a pivotal circumstance. Something good or bad happened in my life. Something took faith at the defining moment and it changed. And we can see the pivotal circumstances up here. Someone says there was a heart healed, a blending of a family, birth of a son, a new job, a new marriage, healing. Those things are positive events that happen in their life. God uses some positive things, answered prayer. How many have ever found your faith grow when God answers a prayer, when he meets a need in your life? Raise your hand. Several of you. But then there's also a flip side. God also uses negative circumstances, a father's death, an auto accident, pain, overcoming depression, different things like that. God uses the negative things. And here's the thing we need to realize. Take a look in your notes this morning. a positive event can steal or strengthen a person's faith. A positive event can steal or strengthen a person's faith. I have seen times before where people have received an answer to prayer. God gives them that new job, or He gives them a promotion. He gives them that full ride to that college of their choice. God answers the prayer. He gives them the healing. He does what they've been asking, and instead of that strengthening their faith, it steals their faith. They sometimes get so caught up on the blessing or throw themselves into the blessing, into the job, whatever it is, you know, into their health, they go about doing their own thing and they kind of forget about God now. Or sometimes they kind of feel like, you know what, this promotion I got, I did that. And they don't recognize God and they get puffed up and then they just think it's about them and they just kind of put God in the background. I've seen positive events steal people's faith, but I've also seen them strengthen people's faith. Now, on the flip side, look at your notes. A negative event can either damage or deepen a person's faith. A negative event can damage or deepen a person's faith. I have seen people who do not receive the answer to prayer. They experience incredible hardship, incredible suffering, torment, sometimes even persecution, that they're not healed, they don't get the job, they lose someone or something that's very, very important to them, and instead of them losing faith, their grip becomes tighter. But I've also seen it when they do lose some people, they lose their faith. Their faith is damaged. They're not walking in the confidence or in the passion that they once had, and some people just chuck it out altogether. You see, these pivotal circumstances, it doesn't matter if it's good or bad. What matters, take a look in your notes, the conclusions we draw about God in the midst of our pivotal circumstances drive us towards or away from Him. It's not the event, but our interpretation of the event. It's not what happens to us, it's what happens in us. How do I interpret this really good thing or this really, really, really horrible thing that's taking place in my life? The media mogul, billionaire Ted Turner, many people don't realize when he was growing up, he wanted to be a missionary. Did you realize that? He wanted to be a missionary. However, his sister contracted a very rare form of lupus. And he and his family prayed and prayed and prayed, and they were told, your faith, if you have enough faith, then she would survive. And when she didn't, when she died, he determined that if there was a God, then he certainly couldn't be trusted, and he walked away from faith in Jesus Christ. He never looked back. Ted interpreted his sister's death as evidence that God was weak, He was inattentive, or He didn't exist at all. When I look at what Ted Turner has accomplished in the world, what do you think Ted Turner would have been like if he would have said, God, I don't care what happened, I'm still going to trust You, and he would have become a missionary? How could have he impacted the world? He missed out on a tremendous blessing. You see, it's not what happens to you, it's how do you interpret life's events. How do you see suffering? In James, I want you to write this down. I don't think we have this in your notes. James chapter 1, verses 2 to 4. James is the brother of Jesus, and this is what he writes about circumstances in faith. It says, my brothers, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Notice the word fall. The word fall is unexpected. And isn't that how trials hit us? We don't expect the trial, the bad thing to happen, and it just happens. You get the doctor's report. You know, your engine goes out. You lose your job. You know, someone says, I'm leaving you. Or, you know, something happens and you don't expect it. And that's what makes these pivotal circumstances so hard, is because it's hard to prepare for them. If you knew it was coming, you could steel yourself. You could prepare. You could think about it. But a lot of times they hit us when we don't expect it, and we fall into various trials, spiritual trials, physical trials, financial trials, emotional trials, relationship trials, all kinds of trials. And they hit us without warning. But he says, look at this, count it all joy. Not part joy, but 100%. Some translations say pure joy. Not partially, not mixed. Count it 100% joy. Yay! When you fall into various trials. Knowing, verse 3, that the testing of your faith produces patience. You know what patience is? Write this down. Patience is a faith that doesn't quit. That's what patience really is. It's a faith that doesn't quit. It doesn't get angry. It doesn't doubt. It doesn't throw in the towel. No, yes, we might ask questions. We might be hurting, and you express those to God, but you never walk away from God. Patience is a faith that doesn't quit. In verse 4, but let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Friends, James says when we're being tested, God is up to something. How many like it when God's up to something? Okay, be careful when you say that, because if you do, you've just invited trials into your life. Now, how many of you like it when God's up to something? Fewer hands, you know, there's fewer hands than that. It's hard to say that. But when we go through difficult times, God is up to something. Consider it all joy. And I tell you, I do not do well with this. Just ask my wife and kids. I mean, counting it all joy. I mean, I need an attitude adjustment more than I need the chiropractor, okay? And I need the chiropractor quite a bit, all right? So it's something we're all working on. And today, as we look at our text, John chapter 11, it's a story from the life of Jesus. And as we walk through this, talking about faith and circumstances, I want us to slow down and just experience the story through the characters. And as we do, it's going to create a new category in our theology. It's a category many of us are going to be uncomfortable with. We're going to see, this is what we're going to realize, Jesus creates bad circumstances. Okay? He creates bad circumstances. It's not that something bad happens and he says, okay, I'm going to take this bad thing that happens and turn it around and use it for good. No, Jesus creates the bad circumstance to use it for good. And that's sometimes hard for us to realize. God would actually create something bad in my life to bring good out of it. We think God uses bad, and he does use bad things. But there's times he creates them. And that can be very uncomfortable. That's what Scripture teaches. Let's take a look. John chapter 11, verse 1. It says, now a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany. This is how the story begins, okay? The town of Mary and her sister Martha. Now, all three of these people, Lazarus, Mary, and Martha, were very important people to Jesus. Very significant. He had a close relationship with them. He went to their house on several occasions. They put him and his 12 disciples up. They stayed with Jesus. They fed Jesus. You know, they were very close friends. It's not like these are some strangers. These are people that staunchly support Jesus. They love him. He loves them back. They're close. I want you to get that. Verse 3, therefore the sisters sent to him. See, Jesus was not present, so they send a messenger to give him this message. And it says, Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick. Now notice they don't say Lazarus is sick. They're saying the one you love is sick. Okay? Here's the thing. They know that Jesus has healed many people. Strangers, people he's never met. In fact, there's times Jesus doesn't even see them. He's never met them face to face, but he says, hey, I say the word and they're healed. You'll go back and you'll find them healed. And they're saying, Jesus, this isn't some stranger. This isn't some nobody, someone you've never met. This is your really good friend, Lazarus, the guy you love. Okay? He's sick. He's the one. So that's what they're communicating. And verse 4, when Jesus heard that, he said, "This sickness is not unto death," look at this, "but for the glory of God." Right here, Jesus creates a category that sickness, illness, and disease can be for God's glory. It's not as a result of someone's sin, although sometimes it can be. Hey, if you do drugs all your life and you have brain damage because you've tripped out too much, man, that's a natural consequence. Sometimes we get sick, sometimes we have physical problems because of the sin that we've done in our life, okay? It's not because of that, and it's not an attack of the devil. And I do believe there are times the devil attacks us and makes us sick in our body, okay? But Jesus creates this new category saying that this sickness is for God's glory. Not a result of sin, not attack of the enemy, but for God to have attention drawn to him and be glorified and exalted and magnified in Lazarus's life. And it goes on to say, it's not unto death, but for the glory of God. And look at verse 4. That the Son of God, that's Jesus, may be glorified through it. See, Jesus repeats this just in case we missed it. Now, here's the thing. I like to give God glory when I've scored the winning touchdown and the microphone's in front of you and it's like, "I want to thank Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior, for giving me the ability to do that." I mean, that's the kind of glory that's nice, isn't it? Or, you know, you get that new job or you get that big promotion. You get that award in business and it's like, "I just want to thank God. You know, he gave me the ability in sales and so I give God the glory." That's the kind of glory we like to give. But Jesus is saying God can receive glory through the bad things that happen to you. Take a look at your notes. God sometimes lets bad things happen and then leverages it for his glory. God sometimes lets bad things happen, and in this case, even creates it, as we see Jesus doesn't move. He's going to delay. He's going to pause. He's going to wait. He creates the bad thing, and then he leverages it for his glory. Take a look at verse 5. Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Jesus wants us to know that he loved them, that he wasn't being mean, that he wasn't upset because they didn't make him his favorite meal when he came to their house one time and he's getting them. No, he loves them. He knew their names. He knew where they lived. They were close. Verse 6, so when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed 2 more days in the place where he was. Take a look at your notes this morning. Jesus sometimes delays his response to our situation. Do you like delays? Do you like not hearing anything? I don't. This is one reason I really believe that the Gospels are true and they're not made up. They're not fiction. I want you to think about this. If Jesus really didn't walk this earth and do the things and the Gospels are made up, so if you're creating fiction, trying to get people to believe this and to buy into your new faith, are you going to write a story about people that Jesus loves and then he lets bad things happen to them, he lets them die, he lets them experience a broken heart, he lets them experience pain, he lets them experience suffering? If you're creating this whole religion thing, is that how you're going to persuade people? Hey, become a Christian and God's going to let bad things happen to you. That's not the way you attract people if you're making up a religion. That's why, another reason, I believe the Gospels are true, the Bible is true, because that's not what you make up if you're making it up. You say, "No, he said be healed," and he's right there. I mean, everything's good. You have no problems. That's how you get people to join your religion if you're making it up. Jesus delayed 2 days. I just wonder, I mean, Mary and Martha, they're waiting. They're taking time. It's like one of them's watching Lazarus, one's along the road. You know, is Jesus coming? They're looking over the horizon. No, he's not coming. They go switch. You know, I'm going to go watch Lazarus. You look for Jesus. People come down the road. Hey, have you seen Jesus? No, I haven't seen Jesus. And they're waiting and they're waiting. And all the time they see their brother slip further and further and further away until the moment that he dies. And he delays. I can guarantee some of you have felt that way before. Where is Jesus when we need him? Why isn't he coming? Why isn't he showing up? Why hasn't he arrived? How many of you ever felt like that before? God, why aren't you answering my prayer? 2 days watching our brother suffer. 2 days watching our brother die. 2 days we've got a broken heart. Jesus waits 2 days. Sometimes Jesus delays. Many of you know that. My wife has been experiencing a physical illness of some kind, and we don't know what it is. There's a lot of fatigue. There's twitching in her face. She can't really go a whole day doing regular activity without having to lay down. Last year, it was really bad. You may remember that, where she couldn't even walk on her own. She needed someone by her. And it was last August that I was in some meetings for our denomination, the Assemblies of God, and someone was giving a devotional. And I remember at that time just seeing my wife's condition deteriorate. And there was concern on my part. God, am I going to lose her? God, is she going to die? The way she's going, she's not going to be walking by Christmas. And we're in the meetings, and speaker sharing about Jesus is the Alpha and the Omega. In the Greek alphabet, Alpha is the first word and Omega is the last word. It's like God's the A and the Z, and he's everything in between. And he knows what's happening. He's in control. And God's going to take care of you. And they had a prayer time, and they asked people who've got a situation where you really need God to intertake. You don't see the middle, what's going on. You just need to trust God and make Jesus your goal, your end, and not your prayer need. And I remember raising my hand, and it was in that prayer time I felt God say to me, this sickness is not unto death. I will heal your wife, but it's going to be a long, slow process. And I remember the hope that gave me in that moment. I haven't had that fear since then. And it was another almost 2 months before we went to Mayo Clinic, and I continued to see her decline, but I didn't have the fear anymore. But you know, we went to Mayo Clinic, and they had no answers. And I remember how discouraging that was. I came away from there really defeated and going, I don't get this. And we've been doing, a few days later, we got in touch with someone that does natural medicine, and we've been doing that, and she's been getting better. But I will tell you honestly, 14 months after God said, I will heal her, it's a long, slow process, I thought she would be completely healed by now. God's delayed. He hasn't worked on my timetable. And there's times in that process I've gotten angry with him. And there's times when she regresses and I get discouraged. And it's like, God, what are you doing? Sometimes God delays. And I can't make him work on my timetable. He is sovereign. And he does what he does for the reasons he does it. And that's what Jesus is teaching us here. He's in control. He knows what's going on when we don't know what's going on. But you can trust him. It's one of the catalysts of faith, that through the good or the bad, you can trust God. God can build your faith. He is there for you. Take a look at verse 7. After Jesus said this, he says, let's go to Judea again. Now you have to realize, Judea is close to Bethany, where Lazarus lives, and Jesus is not a happy, nice place for Jesus. The next verse tells us why. The disciples said to him, Rabbi, lately the Jews sought to stone you, and you're going there again. Bethany is just a few miles to Jerusalem, okay, where the Pharisees are, and they are wanting to stone Jesus. Now, here's the thing. The disciples know Jesus, if they want to stone you, they want to stone us. Are you sure this is a good idea for us to go back there? I mean, Jesus, I remember the time when you said, you go back to the person and just tell them they're healed and they're healed. Why don't you do that again, huh? You know, you can say, we don't have to go back there, but they do. And in the next few verses, Jesus goes into a little Bible lesson. We're not going to get into it, but look at verse 11. It says, these things Jesus said, and after that he said to them, our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go that I may wake him up. And the disciple says, Lord, if he sleeps, he will get well. They're saying, Jesus, if he's just sleeping, we don't need to go back there. We don't need to go to the place where you're going to get stoned, where we're going to get stoned. However, verse 13, Jesus spoke of his death, but they thought he was speaking about taking a rest in his sleep. So Jesus said to them plainly, Lazarus is dead. He tells them, Lazarus is dead. Now I want you to think about this. The whole time the disciples are thinking, well, he's just sick. And now Jesus says, he's dead. And they're thinking, wait a second. He's dead? You know he's dead? And you didn't go, you waited, and you didn't do anything about it? That doesn't sound like the kind, loving God that we know, does it? Does that sound nice or does that sound cruel? You wait around and do nothing till he dies? It goes on to say, verse 15, I am glad for your sakes that I was not there. For your sakes, for our sakes, Jesus, what about Lazarus' sake? He died. What about his sister's sakes? I mean, they've been heartbroken now. What do you mean it's for our sake? Jesus says, I'm glad that I wasn't there. I'm glad that Mary and Martha experienced heartache. I'm glad that Lazarus suffered for a few days. I'm glad that Lazarus died. I'm glad that they're weeping and crying and they're hurting right now. Does this sound like the God that we serve? Jesus said, I'm glad for your sakes that I wasn't there, that you may believe. That word that is the word henna in the Greek language. And whenever there's a henna clause, it's saying, this is the reason why. This is the purpose. And he says, I'm glad I wasn't there. I'm glad I didn't go back. Why? Just so you can believe. And they're saying, what? Wait a second here. Let me understand this. You're saying that people you love, for them to suffer, for them to lose is not as important as us. It's more important for us to believe than for them not to go through suffering. It's more important for us to believe than for them to see healing and wholeness. It's more important for us to believe than for them to have an answer to prayer, than for them not to have their heart broken. Yeah, on every account. Jesus says, it's more important that you believe. Look at your notes. In God's economy, belief is more important than being healed. It's more important than answered prayer. Jesus, you're telling me that you would let someone you love die. Yeah. You're telling me you set this whole thing up to teach us a lesson about faith. Remember, Jesus is going to hand this thing off to these 12 guys. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, him walking on the water and the loaves and the fish. He knows he's handing this whole thing off. And if their faith isn't strong, that no matter what happens, you need to believe. You see, 10 of the 11 who kept following him did not realize that their lives were going to end by martyrdom, that they would die for their faith. And if when they're staring death in their life, if they don't have faith, they're not going to make it to heaven. Jesus is trying to develop a strong faith because he knows the future they're going to face. God knows the future you're going to face, and everything that he is allowing in your life right now is to build your faith and to make you strong so that your faith doesn't fail. It's hard to believe that God would do that. It's hard to believe that God would let people he loves suffer, people he loved die, people he loved go, "Where are you, God?" But Jesus says having a big, bold, audacious faith is the most important thing that can happen. A while back, I was talking with Darren Trumbull, and Darren shared a story with me. And Darren's going to come right now this morning. He's going to share about a pivotal circumstance in his life. Everything's going to be okay. There's not always answers. God doesn't work on our timetable. Sometimes he delays. Sometimes he creates bad things so that he gets glory. And maybe even in Darren's circumstance, he's not seeing the glory and the good that come from it. But count it all joy, pure joy, when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience, and God's up to something in your life.
You have been listening to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly in Casper, Wyoming. For more information, please email us casperfaith@gmail.com or call us at 307-265-9121. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of Casper Faith Assembly, where relationships matter most.